Hello and welcome to the Game Podcast from The Times. I'm Natalie Sawyer, and in the studio today it is Gregor Robertson along with James Restall and Tom Roddy. Hello everyone, how are you all?
Hello, very well, thank you.
Good. Did you have a lovely Valentine's weekend?
It doesn't sound like it, does it?
No.
Wow.
No. Lack of romance here.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, mine was all right. I got my flowers and a card, so I was quite happy. I did all right, so thank you very much for asking. Okay, coming up, we're going to discuss Sean Dyche, changing room team talks and Candy Crush. All that to come after.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This. Now, it is the story that has rocked the world of football since it broke on Friday. Manchester City banned from playing in the Champions League for two seasons by UEFA because of serious breaches of financial regulations relating to financial fair play. Here's what we know so far then. City have been found to have overstated sponsorship revenue and break-even information in accounts submitted to UEFA between 2012 and 2016. UEFA acted on the decision of the Independent Adjudicatory Chamber of the Club Financial Control Body following a hearing held last month. This was because UEFA opened an investigation into City following a series of new allegations about the club in the media, which was led by the German magazine Der Spiegel. We should say, of course, this is all subject to an appeal to the Court of Arbitration for Sport. But if the ban is upheld, City will be unable to play in Europe in the 2020-21 and 2021-22 seasons. And with City on course for a top four Premier League finish, UEFA regulations dictate their Champions League place being passed to the team which finishes fifth, a spot that is currently occupied by Tottenham. So my goodness, it was some Friday with this breaking news. And the question we're now asking today is, does anyone have any sympathy for Manchester City? James?
It's difficult because there are lots of different levels to this story. If you're a player who's just signed for the club, I do have sympathy for them because you look at in rugby at what's happened with Saracens. Elliot Daly signed for them recently. And he suddenly at a club where they've been relegated and the futures of all the players are completely up in the air. And I think if you're a Manchester City player who's signed for the club and think we'll be playing in the Champions League, we'll be having the peak of our career at one of the best clubs in England, then being out of that elite competition for 2 years is a huge deal. And it wouldn't surprise me if players, particularly of the age of Kevin De Bruyne, who I think is 29 and is at the peak of his career, hasn't won the Champions League yet. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if he was to move on or to think about moving on.
So some sympathy that you have, perhaps more towards the players. Tom, where do you stand on all of this?
Yeah, I think also on the kind of flip side of that, I feel sympathy for players who have joined recently, but also ones like Phil Foden came to my mind straight away. Guys who have waited for their chance to come along, and he's David Silva's heir, and it's meant to be next season when he departs, and all of a sudden he won't have that opportunity in the Champions League. And I think I have sympathy for the playing and coaching staff as a whole as well. I think for Guardiola, he's come in, he believes, you know, what he's been given is all, you know, good and proper. And with these allegations, it puts the next couple of years in jeopardy in Europe. And I think the only thing is, though, a cynic might say next season, it's we're always looking at Guardiola to win the Champions League at City. That's the holy grail. Cynic might say that he can concentrate on the Premier League and challenging Liverpool, and that's it. And he has that excuse then, doesn't he? Because we're not competing in the Champions League.
Gregor, let's come to you then as someone who's played the game. We always like to say that. but obviously, I echo what Tom and James have said. We have sympathy for the players and the predicament they have now found themselves in. the dream of playing in the Champions League for next season and the season beyond that as well. That's gone as things stand right now, obviously all pending this Court of Arbitration for Sport appeal. Can you obviously echo that as well?
Yeah, I mean, the only people you have sympathy for are the players and the coaching staff, as the guys have said.
And the fans, I suppose.
And the fans, yeah. I mean, the fans that aren't the ones who, kind of, the vocal minority on social media who seem to be able to defend almost anything. But the club and the hierarchy, absolutely no sympathy whatsoever. It's just kind of reeks of super rich who believe they can sort of, they're above the law, above the rules, they can do what they want. And they're essentially trying to undermine UEFA's authority and integrity. And it's, I think it could be huge for, kind of, it could be huge ramifications for football in general, because these are the governing bodies and they're essentially saying that, you know, they're acting as if they were judge and ruler and as if that's an issue, that this is the governing body of the game. And there's also all sorts of conflicts between FIFA and UEFA, and we've spoken about at all levels of the game there's conflicts between the governing bodies who are actually kind of financial competitors now. So I think it could kind of cause a real fracture in the way that the game is governed.
I think you can argue about the legitimacy and the merit of having financial fair play rules as a thing, but if that's what's been agreed and this is the playing field that Manchester City are operating on, they've got to comply to the rules. And so I don't have sympathy with the club for and the hierarchy, because they knew the rules, they knew what they were signing up to, and you know the content of the evidence that appeared in Der Spiegel did look quite damning about what the club had done. So
this whole debate about financial fair play itself though now, and its kind of merits, its very existence, which they almost basically argue there are none. I mean, I just can't understand. There are a lot of people, a lot of kind of journalists, a lot of, you know, people whose views I would hold kind of great weight in, are saying that financial fair play has no merits, or it's sort of entrenching an elite. But I mean, what's the alternative? We're just untrammeled spending by Gulf states and oligarchs. I can't understand how people are suggesting that financial fair play has no merits. Yes, it's hard to break into. The elite at Manchester City have shown, although they've made a pretty good job of it. But I can't see how the financial fair play, it's not perfect, but, you know, football clubs in this country especially, you look at Bournemouth, Sheffield United, Burnley, these clubs can they're still fairy tale stories. Leicester City is another example, obviously. I don't think that we're the right kind of country to be complaining about the sort of 1%, the rich 1%, and the elite.
We await to see if there's going to be any more ramifications as a result of this situation with Manchester City and UEFA. But there has been, and obviously this will be away from Manchester City, there have been other clubs and other people suggesting maybe that they should be stripped of the titles that they have won during this four-year period. We'd certainly know it would be the 2013-14 Premier League title that would have to be stripped if this was to happen. Is that too harsh for you, Tom? Are we really going to go down that route?
I think it is too harsh, because, again, we've just been talking about the playing and coaching staff who would be the ones who probably feel that the most, wouldn't they? Again, you get the likes of Steven Gerrard watching on, Brendan Rodgers watching on, Jose Mourinho speaking about it yesterday, and I don't know if it makes a big enough difference, and I think the punishment is far too harsh.
It's a difficult one, because I look at it from the perspective of the clubs that have lost out, and you mentioned Gerrard, and you know, he never won the Premier League as a player. What was the one major trophy that eluded him at club level? But would you actually want to now have on your record kind of that you were a Premier League champion, even though you didn't have that moment where you were standing in front of the Kop lifting the trophy aloft?
And it will be like an asterisk by Manchester City.
But also the other thing as well, on the flip side, for the Liverpool owners, they'd be able to say, you know, they'll win the title this year. They will have won it in 2014. They'll be able to say, yeah, two Premier League wins. I don't know what that would be worth commercially. I'd look at former, you look at former players like Gerrard, who could then legitimately call themselves Premier League champions. So it's a really difficult one. I think the FFP threshold in the Premier League regulations is higher than UEFA's. So we'll wait and see what sanctions the Premier League do impose. But I'm not sure how much of an appetite there would be to strip to actually take titles away. I can see them getting a points deduction, Manchester City.
Yeah.
But I couldn't see sort of retrospective action.
Well, Stephen Gerrard has said this. If you look at the severity of the punishment from UEFA, something has gone badly wrong. So I'm really interested to see the outcome of that. Until I get the punishment, though, from the Premier League, I won't comment further. But I'm really, really interested in it for obvious reasons. Gregor, does it in some way surprise you? I mean, obviously, as rightly pointed out, Stephen Gerrard's never won the Premier League. So he could, if things were to go terribly wrong for Manchester City, end up with a Premier League winner's medal. But are you surprised, really, that Stephen Gerrard would want that in that circumstance?
I don't know. I mean, I think only you could answer how sort of deep the pain and the agony was for him of that loss. And, how, you know, we're talking about fairly small margins. And for someone who never won the competition, obviously, it wouldn't be an ideal way for him to end up with a winner's medal. But, I mean, I think we're getting quite far ahead of ourselves here. I'd be amazed if anything like that happened. I think City should be punished if they're found to be guilty, because otherwise these rules are absolutely pointless. It's, you know, we're seeing the same thing.
So what would be a fitting punishment?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of people think that they've given them the 2-year ban because it allows the sort of wiggle room to be able to reduce it to 1 year. And I think 1 year would be a statement enough, really.
But nothing within the Premier League? Punishment-wise?
I don't know. It's very difficult because, you know, you kind of look at what's going on in the Championship. And the thing is, it has sort of ramifications. There's a knock-on effect as well. And it kind of... teams that are dropped down the league and it saves other teams from relegation and things like that, you know, there's a whole sort of bigger picture to look at. I don't know really if that would be the same as a hit in the pocket and the kind of the humiliation almost of being banned from European football, which is what they've been aiming for all this time.
If you wanted to take a cynical look at it, you could say that the Premier League could come in with a hefty points deduction this season. They're out of the running for the title. They already now know they're not going to be in the Champions League next season. And it would make the Premier League look at least a little bit neater and tidier at the end of the season, where you have a top four that qualify there on their own merit. But then you don't have the, you know, you don't have the kind of the big asterisk that kind of goes, oh, well, fifth place is in the Champions League this year.
Yeah.
If you wanted to have a really cynical look at it, that could be a neat solution for the Premier League here. So, yeah, we'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens. But we should also discuss the futures of Guardiola and the Manchester City players. We know that Pep Guardiola has a contract at the club until 2021, and we understand he has been kept informed by the club throughout this whole process. So it will be business as usual for the time being. There has, of course, already been speculation about Guardiola's long-term future and an absence of Champions League football for one of the world's top coaches, who has not won the competition for 9 years since his time with Barcelona, surely will come into his thinking. But having said that, there are reports that Pep Guardiola has spoken to his City players and he has said this, and this is going on the conversation we just had about the possible ramifications domestically about what could happen if the Premier League were to step in. Supposedly, Pep Guardiola has said this: whatever league we are in, I will still be here. Even if they put us in League Two, I will still be here. This is a time for sticking together. So he sounds as though he's very unified in staying and wants to still be the Manchester City manager, Tom. But do you really believe that?
I found it remarkable, really. I think there's this not quite constant, but this flirtation with Italian football and the prospect. I mean, that's what he does. He comes in, he changes the way teams and in our case, countries and coaches play and want to play, and he's done that here. there are always going to be kind of challenges, and the challenge for him was to rebuild that Manchester City side and squad. I don't think he'd have ever expected this to be in the way to go about it. And I think, like we said for the past 10 minutes about this, it's all going to be kind of, his future is going to be dependent on what the outcome is, how players react as well. But I've always thought he's looked tired before all of this. I thought he looked tired anyway, and that I could see a sabbatical coming.
Well, win the Champions League this season, James, and it pretty much is job done for Pep Guardiola at Manchester City. But if they don't win, obviously they'll have to wait until the 2022-23 season. And who knows if Pep Guardiola will be there?
Yeah, I mean, he's never been at a club more than 4 seasons, I think. Just going back on the previous thing, I hope they're not in League Two because next season, because then that makes Leighton Orient's promotion push much harder.
Oh, but think of the final at Wembley. It'd be tremendous.
A journeyman column from the Etihad.
Yeah.
I'd love that.
But in all seriousness, I think there's so much pressure on this Champions League game next week. Mm. So much pressure. And we were already saying in podcasts earlier this season that there are big issues in Manchester City's defence. They're not scoring as often as they have done earlier in the season. It's really difficult, and now this pressure's even more ratcheted up. I think UEFA confirmed yesterday that they are going to play the anthem at the Etihad, so that'll be met with probably a bigger chorus of boos than it ever has done. Yes. There's so much riding on this game for City and Guardiola. So it'll be fascinating to see what happens.
So that's the manager's take. What about the players? The absence of Champions League football may also be too much for some of them to take, and they'll all be considering their futures. Greg, well, let's come to you then as a player, former player. I don't know why I always say that. I should really stop, shouldn't I? But anyway, as someone who has played the game, do you have any loyalty to a club?
It's very rare.
Yeah.
Very rare. I know, like, supporters don't like to hear that, but loyalty is a very, very rare thing in football.
Especially nowadays. There may have been a time.
Yeah. I think, really, let's be brutally honest, if these players are going to get offer of more money or of a better chance to win silverware, then they're going to take it, at least explore it. And, you know, as James alluded to, there are players who are kind of entering their prime, and 2 years out of your prime is potentially, you know, it's quite a long time. And also, you don't know the kind of the more long-term ramifications for the club, and whether their finances will become a little bit more straightened.
Whether other Leighton Orient in League Two.
Well, I think that would be there would be an exodus then. Yeah. So no, the answer is no. There's no loyalty. I think if players see a better opportunity to win something, they'll go elsewhere.
Well, let's be a little bit naughty and talk about a couple of players then, and work out whether or not you think they should stay or go if this is upheld, this ban for 2 seasons by UEFA and Manchester City. Let's start with their main man, Sergio Aguero. He turns 32 in June. Will he stay or will he go, Tom?
I think the temptation would be to go because he's not won the Champions League yet. I'm sure pretty much all those European clubs would want him in their side. I think he's one of the best players the Premier League has ever seen. He's one of the few loyalists, though Gregor was kind of referring to, so I think he'll stay, actually, or he would stay.
I mean, he's been at the club for a very, very long time, and Mancini, Pellegrini, now Guardiola, building their teams around him. Does he owe Manchester City anything for that reason?
No. He's given so much to that club. He's been a talismanic striker. He's had to reinvent a large part of his game to stay and fight to be the main man in Pep Guardiola's team. I think his future should be totally on his terms, and the club should give him whatever he wants. I mean, he's probably, if we, you know, we can't get into this debate now, but there's a very strong case for him being the best foreign import to the English leagues ever. He's got 200 Premier League goals in his sights, which only Rooney and Shearer have done before since 1992. So, yeah, he can. To me, Aguero can do whatever he wants.
but more go than stay?
I don't. I think it's up to him. I totally think it's up to him.
Well, it will be up to him.
No, of course it will. But I think it's if he did choose to go, I don't think anyone could have any complaints. Yeah. And I think he's served that club brilliantly.
Okay, Gabriel Jesus, still only 22, would become City's number one striker, of course, if Aguero was to leave. Stay or go?
I think he's someone who probably would stay. I think actually the players who would be most likely to go are their very best players, and he's not quite in that bracket. So you're looking at Sterling and De Bruyne. I think Aguero, he's not won a Champions League. I think he'd be, if there's an opportunity to do so, I think he would probably take it. So I think really outside that bracket of the City's very best players, who obviously they would want to keep hold of the most, but that would be their biggest assets, who'd get the most money for them. So I think Jesus would be someone who'll be hanging around.
And Tom, what about Phil Foden then? You mentioned him earlier on, how you have sympathy for him. Only 19. Obviously, if there were some big name players leaving Manchester City, that would give Phil Foden a huge chance. But does he need Champions League football for his development?
I don't think particularly. I just think he needs to be playing week in, week out. And in that case, even though saying it's a shame, it would be a shame that his first season, or what we believe will be his first season playing regularly, wouldn't include Champions League football. I think he should stay, partly because otherwise it just seems ridiculous to have waited all that time. You know, I think I would suspect there would be doubt in his mind anyway about whether he should have possibly moved on, seeing Jadon Sancho do what he's done. And so I think he'd need to stay, and it would be an opportunity, if all this kind of fell out in the way we're talking about, it'd be an opportunity for him to really cement himself as one of the best in that position.
I also, I don't think, if I remember correctly, I don't think Raheem Sterling's first few years at Liverpool weren't Champions League regulars at that time. I don't think it's the be-all and end-all to be playing in the Champions League at that age. I think, actually, it could work in his favour next season. If they aren't in the Champions League, you alluded to this earlier, and they've got a free crack at the Premier League, there's probably a bigger break between games. He can be managed a bit better. I think it's actually a good opportunity for him, especially with David Silva leaving at the end of the season.
More likely though is that there'll be a battle in the courts for about the next decade. Yes. And nobody's going anywhere.
And they're still playing Champions League football.
It's just depressing, really. You know, I think it kind of shining a light on the sort of murky side of elite football at the moment, and it's a bit kind of distasteful.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Really?
Now, the Burnley manager, Sean Dyche, has revealed comments in the Southampton programme boosted the motivation of his players before kick-off at St Mary's on Saturday. A superb strike by the substitute Matej Vidra clinched a 2-1 success on the South Coast to make it 3 victories from 4 Premier League games for Dyche's men. When discussing the win, Dyche pointed out, ironically, the Southampton programme said, Sheffield United have played more long balls than us, and yet they are definitely not long balls. But I'm not really worried about it, and I know Chris Wilder is not. A good technical analysis in their programme, he said, I quite enjoyed that. I told the lads and said, there you go, this is what they think of you. And it is always lovely when they give you that little edge to work on. I love that. He finally finished off by saying, before a game, all the preparation is done, so I just sit there playing Candy Crush to, like, level a million. So, have we ever criticised someone and lived to regret it, James?
I'd like to say a brief story from a time with a former employer where I commissioned a piece after Tottenham had lost three games, sort of analysing where they'd gone wrong. And I think the headline I put on it at the end was something along the lines of, is Pochettino losing his magic touch? And they got to the Champions League final. It was one of those moments with hindsight that was a bad decision. But I wouldn't say live to regret it, but you always learn from it, don't you?
You certainly do, that is for sure. But you say that, but yet we find ourselves in this situation quite a lot when you say something and you regret it instantly, or as in the case of the programme writers, they probably regretted it when they hear what Sean Dyche made of what was written in the Southampton programme. But it is something that infuriates me when people will write something trying to give their own team the edge and yet it backfires, or even like football chants. I mean, goodness me, that infuriates me more than anything. I just think, be quiet, stop singing about the other team, for example. Why do we do it, Gregor? We know it's going to backfire more often than not.
Yeah, I've actually been in Charlie Taylor's position as well.
Okay.
I remember this. It's when I was reading this, I instantly remembered. It's only happened to me once, but reading the programme and it saying that the left back, i.e. me, could be got at.
Oh! I was like,
hang on a minute. And I remember the game vividly. Wow. It was Watford at Vicarage Road when I was at Nottingham Forest. And this is showing my age. Sean Dyche was playing for Watford.
Oh!
Wow. I looked that up this morning.
Gosh.
So, and we spoke about it before the game. You know, we had a laugh about people kind of ribbed you a wee bit. It was only my, like, I think it was like my 15th game for Forest. But geez, up, I was raging.
And on the basis of 14 games, well, yeah, you know, they'd said that you could be got at.
They maybe thought this teenager was being thrown in at left back.
Yeah, but did they get you?
Yeah.
No, we drew 1-1. So it's not like I had a, you know, we didn't win 5-0 because of the rage from the programme. But I was angry. And it works, it's true. Football careers are based on fear of, like, letting people down, teammates, family, coaches, all that, and proving people wrong. Either proving people who've doubted you wrong, or proving that you're good enough to play at that level and be in that stage. So,
but the person that wrote that about you, they weren't writing it to fire you up, they were writing it to put you down. So why would they do it? Because they know, more often than not, you're going to want to try and prove them wrong.
Well, obviously they didn't. they're not thinking that way. They're just thinking about their analysis or whatever.
Yeah.
But I mean, this always happens. There's so many times I've seen managers who pin things up on the changing room. Often, almost often, at the start of every season, you'll get I played for one manager who would put up a prediction, the prediction leagues from like betting companies and stuff. And if you're down the bottom half, then all season you see that's what they thought of you. And and you want to better that. So, you know, there's people always do that. They kind of little mind game, psychological advantages.
I just remember going to a club towards the end of a season and seeing, going around their training ground and seeing that they'd put the bottom half of the league table up there and they were in the bottom three or the bottom four and they kind of used it and said, one, and it was like one win puts you here, and it was a sort of using the league table as a motivational tool.
Yeah, yeah.
And which, I mean, if it had been me, I wouldn't want it to be reminded every day that I was in the relegation zone. But I can see how it worked.
Did that team get out of it?
No.
Oh.
I remember something with your team as well. It's sort of along the same lines of Mr. Hearn, where he'd
he's
the start of a season, he went in and he put a map on the wall, and I think he knew that he thought 90 points would get automatic promotion, so he put 90 dots between there and Las Vegas, and he had a toy plane, and he said to the captain, only you can touch this.
Yep.
Every time you get points, move it forward. So they moved it a lot. They got to Wembley and they lost in the playoff finals, but
they still got the Vegas trip.
They got the Vegas trip, yeah.
Do you know what, now you've said that, I think I was in Vegas when they were there, because I think I remember how funny. Anyway, Tom, any stories you can tell us?
I was actually just thinking that I'm not surprised you're infuriated by it, because it got me thinking about the Brentford game last week. Thomas Frank saying about them needing to fear Brentford, and it didn't quite backfire totally, but that was the best I'd seen Leeds play for a while. So
yeah, no, I mean, it probably did work in some ways to their advantage, but if you can't be fired up for a game anyway without having to read into what the opposition are saying, I think it's not that great.
It's a gamble, isn't it, when you do that sort of thing? It's a complete gamble, and it can go either way. I don't think it's a surefire thing.
After all the publicity, Inter Miami is set to make its MLS debut on March the 1st when the season returns. David Beckham heads up the ownership group, of course, and has been busy revealing video plans online of their proposed new stadium, though it won't actually be ready until 2022. Including, though, in the new stadium, it will be a 25,000 all-seater, including a single-tier wall behind one of the goals. There'll be palm trees, what would you expect, it's Miami, and a bar on the roof, all at a cost of a cool £750 million. Now, sadly, we haven't got a spare £750 million to build a game podcast stadium, but if we were given the chance to start our own football club, what would it look like? Our panel have been busy putting together their own plan for their own dream club, so let's see what they have come up with. Will it be a glitz and glamour superpower in the sun, managed by, possibly, soon to be out of work, Pep Guardiola, with billions to spend in pursuit of world domination? Or are you a bit more of a purist, preferring a non-league heroes arena with just a few hundred hardcore watching on as the big man up front secures another gritty 1-0 win? So this is what I want from you all, Tom, James and Gregor. Your club name, your motto, your playing style, and also your five-year plan. And let's start with you, James. What have you got for us?
So I live in Clapham in South London, a part of London known for Clapham Junction railway station. So I'm going for Locomotive Clapham.
Oh.
The motto, again, sort of sticking to the railway route, but also an indication of our desire and our relentless quest to be the best. Our motto is simply, no passengers.
I was hoping for a choo-choo or something, but no passengers.
No passengers. And it would be, the Latin is non viatores. That would be on the crest. So we'd have that there. Playing style, just direct. We'd just be direct.
Nice.
And, you know, I might not succeed with this approach, but I would ask Mr. Dyche if he'd like to come and manage the club.
So it's not the prettiest style.
No, goodness, no. It's just very functional. Efficient and hopefully a style of football that will yield results. In terms of the five-year plan, though, rather like a railway project, I think it'll probably be over budget. It'll probably be delayed, and we'll probably won't hit any of our targets. So there we are.
Wow, I'm not sure many are going to be able to better James's. Was it Locomotive Junction?
Locomotive Clapham.
Sorry, Locomotive Clapham. Is that locomotive with a K or a C?
With a K.
Nice. I like that.
A la Moscow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like the European style to that.
Inspired by
Inter
Miami.
I like it. Good. Okay, Tom, what's yours?
I think I'm going to disband my idea and join Locomotive Clapham, to be honest. It sounded very appealing. My team is called, it could be based anywhere, but the Rutland Rovers.
Oh.
And, yep, and we are joining the Isle of Scilly Football League.
Okay.
And the reason is because, unlike Arsenal finishing fourth every year, we would guarantee finishing third. Because, of course, there are only two teams in the Isle of Scilly League.
Okay.
So, if you think first year finishing third is pretty impressive, I'd say. And I'm afraid the motto is more of a mission statement. It is, we fly in the face of conventional thinking and take pride in disrupting the status quo.
That's okay.
Put that on a crest.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's not going anywhere
but
near
it's also,
a crest.
It's also may have come from Inter Miami's website. but I think they're slightly busy at the moment dealing with their own issues with plagiarism. and our playing style would be, again, we're thieving from the Red Bull style. We're going 4-2-2-2 because I just love it. And we're going to spend most of the budget on bringing Ed Woodward to Rutland Rovers for commercial reasons, and most of the rest would be spent bringing Alan Kirbishley
Alan Carr, Bichler.
It's about time he's back in the game.
Well, I'm sick of seeing him on those when managers get sacked and he's at the bottom of
the betting.
I know.
Exactly.
Alan Carr, Bichler.
But you don't see him anymore, really.
Will soon at the Rutland Rovers. So,
wow.
There you are.
Next guest on this podcast, Alan Carr, Bichler, 18-1.
And it'll be a Glenn Tamplin style as well. I'll be owner and manager for the first season, though. So.
Oh, well, what happened to Curbs?
He's coming next year.
Oh, right, okay.
I might have to fight you for Curbs, though.
Yeah?
Team, yeah.
Whoa, okay, Greg, I want to hear it.
I'm setting up a kind of retirement team/social club for ex-pros.
Okay.
Does this exist already?
We may not even train, we'll just play on a Saturday. Called FC Fossils. Motto's Over the Hill. And we're definitely route one because we're not mobile. So I'm thinking of getting Cascarino back and putting him up front. And Curbs could be the gaffer, to be fair. You know, he's been out of the game a long time. I think there's room for like sponsorship with kind of retirement homes.
Okay. Saga, something like that.
Yeah, incontinence pants, things like that. So it's a proper old fogies. Social club.
And does there have to be a minimum age?
Well, I think early days it can be. It's going to be like over 50s.
So you can't even play in this.
No,
Gregor.
I'm the gaffer, the owner, like Tamplin as well.
Okay, right.
But then as we progress, we'll probably lower the age. Maybe that always over 35 though.
Yes.
No one younger than 35.
I'd actually seen some early analysis of this team, and apparently you can get the left back.
Yeah, get at him. So FC Fossils, Rutland Rovers, and Locomotive Clapham. Well done. That was good. I think, though, if I'm going to favour anyone, it's going to be Locomotive Clapham.
Yeah.
I like it. Right. Do you know what we're going to do? We're going to finish our pod today with a quiz. Producer Max has done some of his fiendish work and found some interesting trivia for us. So, 8 players have played for both Chelsea and Manchester United in the Premier League. 2 may be obvious, 2 easy. Max suggests there's 3 that are tough and then 1 he says is very hard. So there are 8 names to get. So I'd like you to all help out and come up with the 8 names. So anyone want to come in with a first one?
Well, Mata and Matic.
Very good.
The first obvious ones.
I'm going to go Lukaku.
Oh, lovely.
Good, good. This is good. These are the first 3 that Max had written. So you had the 2 obvious ones, are Matic and Mata. Then you have Lukaku.
Striker that came from Monaco.
Falcao.
Very good. Yes, that's again part of the easy.
Is that an easy thing?
I'm going to throw a Mark Bosnich into the mix.
Yes, lovely. Very good. Yeah, he moved from Manchester United to Chelsea in 2001.
Veron.
Yes, good. Very good. So Chelsea paid United £15 million for him, but he actually made 7 Premier League appearances.
Sparky, Mark Hughes.
Very good. So that was a 1995 transfer. Do you know how much he cost?
Oh, to Chelsea?
Yeah. From United.
£2 million?
According to Max, £1 million.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Right, there's one more, which is the tough one.
Oh.
Yeah, this is a tough one.
Would it give it away if we had some, had an era clue?
Around the same sort of time as Mark Hughes. Gregor, you're very quiet. It's not like you. Since we don't have Alison going, Pujek! She was very quick.
Would we be able to have a position?
Possibly. We could go with a defender.
Mm. Oh, is it French defender?
No.
I'm struggling here.
Well, he made over 100 appearances for Manchester United in the early 90s and actually didn't move to Stamford Bridge until 1997. In between that, he played for Derby, Sheffield United and Fulham. Also played for QPR and Fulham before his move to Old Trafford. So 2 spells at Fulham. Played for England 19 times.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, goodness me. It's a tough one, isn't it? Do you want me to give you... How about if you had a pen, right? You know you can get some really nice pens, some really flashy pens.
Oh. Is it Paul Parker?
Paul Parker! Who knew that would give it away?
Brilliant.
Indeed, Paul Parker. As I say, he had spells in between his time at Manchester United and Chelsea, but made 4 Premier League appearances, that's all, for Chelsea in 1997. There you go, not bad. Didn't take us too long, so well done. That is it for now. Many thanks to our guests today, James Restall and Tom Ruddy.
Remember, you can subscribe to The Times and The Sunday Times to enjoy award-winning journalism online or on your smartphone or tablet.
It is just £1 a week for an 8-week trial. Search The Times subscription for more information, and we'll be back on Thursday.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on. Settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books. Contacts. Calendar. Double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.